And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast that asks the question, can you do it until you need glasses?
Hey, Michael, you know how cool my wife is?
How cool is your wife?
She's so cool that when she had a fever, she understood why I wanted to have sex with her.
I don't understand.
Because she's hot.
Oh, dear God.
This is number 68.
And thanks, aloha. Oh, my God. Today we're doing a very special episode of Deep Thinking, like one of those ABC after school specials, although this one doesn't involve a doll that you point at to tell you where Uncle Touchy was playing with you. The reason that we're doing this...
Are we going to tell the real reason we're doing this?
This is the gratitude issue.
We're going to tell this is what the gratitude is wrong with this engine?
Oh, we'll get there in a minute.
Get there?
Okay. No, this is the special gratitude issue of Deep Thinking. And the reason that this is the gratitude issue is because it's still not quite race season yet, although we're getting there. And
what are you talking about? We're a ways west already raced.
I'm talking about professional racing, and basically I'm talking about MotoGP, AMA, sorry,
World
Moto
Superbike
America,
already raced.
British Superbike. Yeah, I know.
Go,
I know.
Nikki!
Please, please. Yeah.
It's funny when you interrupt, but not when I interrupt.
I was going to say, go to Honda, but he's already there. You know where I want Nikki to go? I want Nikki to go to 2017. No, I want him to go to 2017, where allegedly Honda's got a new bike coming out. But this brings us back to the past, Ed. And here's why we should be grateful. You want to know why we should be grateful?
Probably not.
Because I was watching the 1982 Castrol 6-hour at, I think it's Amaru Park. I could be wrong. Anyway, it's someplace in Australia or New Zealand.
You should just put that on your t-shirt.
I could be wrong. Well, all of us could be wrong. Hey, dude, for thousands of years, the smartest people on this planet thought it was flat. Okay? So, first off, Wayne Gardner is a beast, okay? He rode the bike that he was on for like 4 hours. His teammate stunk. His teammate was like 2 seconds a lap slower than he was, and he dragged that thing into the lead with about 4 minutes to go. That was so cool to watch. But here's why I'm thinking about gratitude. Number one, the Suzuki Katana 1100 was Suzuki's entry in the race this year. Okay, that thing, if you looked at it from the front, looked like a BMW boxer twin. The motor was about this wide, and I'm holding out my arms about as big as my torso. It was ridiculous. Those guys, some of those dudes had to come in for alternator case cover changes in the middle of the race because they had just worn it to shreds, right?
Yeah, you got to remember, though, that this is like looking at hairstyles from the 70s.
I know.
At the time, it was cutting edge.
It was the cool,
and
believe
we were comparing
me.
It to the thing before it, which was way worse.
I am not, dude, I would love to have a Katana 1100 from
no,
back in
you
the
wouldn't.
Day. Why not?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't because I'd have to work on it.
Yeah, you wouldn't want me to. Okay, what's the other reason?
Because...
Just because Ed said so. And plus,
no, I mean, right? All those bikes are great until you have to try to buy parts for them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just...
Know. But you go back far enough and they have these things called points.
Yeah, right?
Like, I had to work on a bike that had points the other day.
Oh, my
and
God.
And my little point opener, closer, noisemaker, thingamashiggy, you know, it died. It'd been sitting in a box so long, it said, fuck you.
Right?
I had to do it old school with a multimeter.
It's sort of like your carburetor synchronizer tube thing.
No, those are good. They're right there.
Yeah, that one still works.
I have bikes
huh?
with carburetors. I just don't have bikes with points.
Oh, my God. Anyway, I want a modern bike that looks like that one. Okay?
Right.
Totally badass. Reason number two that we should be grateful for road racing during the period that we race bikes in.
Is this going to be the Thanksgiving edition?
No, I told you, this is the special after school edition of Deep Thinking. Point number two. Honda had introduced a bike, and I want to get it right. It was the CB... Because I don't want to be wrong this time. It was the CB1100R.
Yeah.
Never sold in the United States. It was a production race bike, full fairing, yep. Single seat.
Inline
four. Right.
Five. It was a big version of the CB900F.
571 pounds. That's the bike that Gardner wrestled around for 4 hours in this tight little track where a good lap was in the 56 second range.
With 18-inch wheels.
It was, I'm just, dude.
The thing came with 19-inch front wheels.
I did it. I don't.
Well, all bikes in that era did.
All I know is that that thing was a beast. It's like a sport touring bike now, and like a big sport touring bike. The Yamaha FJ09 is a sport touring bike that makes more power than that and weighs 462 pounds wet. Yep. So I'm just, you know, anytime you want to complain about a modern 600 or a modern leader bike, shut up.
You don't hear me complaining.
One of my fantasies is to build a bike from the era.
Right.
19-inch front wheel, two-valve head, no shifter, carburetors.
Right.
And put some kid on it. See how many laps it takes till it comes in the pits crying.
Exactly.
Like, it won't stop. It won't go. It won't turn. Exactly. I can't shift.
Could you please find me some new underwear?
Yeah.
Right.
By the way, the reason that we're fading in and out is because I'm working on Gugis's Hawk engine while we're making this podcast.
Speaking of old bikes,
Why are we working on this engine, Michael? What happened to it?
Because it had the definition of abuse. Some lunatic stripped the output shaft on this thing. Is it actually?
Okay, so he's talking about the shaft that the countershaft sprocket goes on.
Right.
And the way these bikes work is there's no big nut to tighten down the countershaft sprocket onto the shaft.
It sits on a spline.
The countershaft goes on the spline like normal.
Thank you.
But then there's a plate that you slide over and turn it a few degrees so it is it's behind the splines, and you use two bolts to hold the plate to the countershaft sprocket. And that allows the thing to, you know, walk a little bit, and eventually it wore out the splines, and then
the crackhead who owned it before me, and this is no lie, actually welded the countershaft sprocket onto the output shaft. No explanation, just absolutely welded it on there. It's amazing. So that's got to come out. And we're going to take it apart anyway, because this is going to be one of my, this could be a race bike for me anyway. I always wanted a Honda Hawk, and I was in between bikes, and I figured, you know, why not? I figured, why not? I'm at that point in my life. Wira West has a class for this bike that is for this bike in its stock configuration. So we're going to build it, and we're going to keep it stock. With the it's going to be a D super stock legal bike. I'm done building super bikes. I am absolutely done with unreliable.
Please name the super bikes you built.
Oh, had an SV.
That you built.
Well, I had it built. Okay. I didn't personally do it. But I was the guy.
I always love it when I read the thing from the rider.
Right.
He talks about.
All this I did.
I changed the gearing, blah, 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 blah. The guy sat on his butt and watched.
No.
Some other sucker do the work.
But I was hauling that bike to the shop every month between races, you know. And I was like, I'm done with that, you know. Ed is now using a hammer on the engine.
A dead blow mallet.
That's badass, dude. You know what? That's my whole toolbox. Just nothing but mallets. Ed, what are we going to talk about today other than our gratitude for racing bikes that weigh less than 571 pounds?
Your gratitude? I'm perfectly happy to race those bikes.
You're not well, dude.
Look at my Hurricane. It's got those a steel frame.
Those people look wore out after their shift, man.
Yeah.
It was great. I have to say this. I mean, they were really picky. When they said production, this is the race for production bikes, they weren't kidding. The cotter pin that held on the rear axle nut, if it was one of those split pins that you bent open with pliers, that's what you had to use during the race, okay? The Katana.
One of the cool modifications that we made to our Hurricanes
for
the endurance races was we put a regular old school castle nut on so that you could use a hitch pin instead of having a...
You weren't allowed to do that in this series.
Yeah, but in our... Yeah. What I'm saying is that was trick. To go back to a castle nut,
right?
Because putting the hitch pin through the hole is way faster quicker than safety wiring the nut.
Right, way quicker, right? So, what was that? Oh, that's right. You had to use a stock exhaust. You couldn't get the axle out past the stock exhaust. What they did, they threw the bike up on a center stand and popped the two bolts at the top of the shock.
And
boom.
Dropped it down?
Yep, and the whole swing arm dropped down, the axle slides right out. Pretty clever.
So, yeah, and it's interesting that the idea of going back to production class rules is coming back.
Yeah.
It's coming back because, you know, a modern production bike is just freaking
amazing.
But the thing to remember is the way we went away from, the reason we went away from that stuff was that kind of pain in the ass stuff. Like, right. What gain did you get for the series that the guy had to take the shocks off to change his wheel, right?
Right.
You're just following the letter of the rule.
Yep. I agree. And I was thinking about that KTM that you worked on, the 390, with the rear fender that took like 47 different fasteners on it or whatever.
Yep.
You know?
11.
Yeah. But it's like, but my therapist says I'll be able to forget that soon.
Ed, what else are we going to talk about today?
We got a list there for you.
We have a list.
You can read it.
Let's see.
What I've done so far is taken out the spark plugs and the timing cover plugs so I can turn the engine over to set it to top dead center.
Got it.
And then I'm backing off the valve adjustment.
Because we got to adjust the valves anyway.
Well, no, because of what I want to take the cam towers off. I don't want the cam lobe pushing into the spring,
right,
shoving the thing up cockeyed, and then it binds and won't come out.
Why? It looks like it's missing a valve. It's only got three valves per cylinder.
Valve head, yes.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
It's called pin proof.
I like it. Let's see. Ed, in your notes it says no problems when having fun. What does that mean?
So this is from you from the last race, wherever the heck we were.
Okay.
We were at Willow.
Right.
And you were grumbling up a storm about all these handling issues with your bike.
After.
And you were actually doing a fairly scientific approach. You're like, well, I tried this and I wrote it down and I didn't. What about this? So we were making that stuff. And then in the race, you got in a battle with somebody and had a good time and completely forgot that you had all these problems.
Actually, I'll be honest with you. One of the things I was proudest of after that race is because I had a strategy to get to the line first. Okay?
Right.
But it involved me doing something.
By the way, Michael won the battle.
I don't want to brag or nothing.
I'll brag for you.
Thanks. But I had a plan, but that plan involved me doing something that you had told me to do.
So then you didn't want
to
do it.
I didn't want to because it was scary, but I did it anyway, and it worked, and that was all. And you know, yeah, when
you know, in my fantasy world,
what?
You would remember that I was right
and
apply that next time I tell you to do something that seems crazy to you.
I remember exactly, and that's part of the reason I was so happy. You're right. Somebody hands you a trophy, everything goes, you know, goes good. Then you have to remember when you get home, okay, what was it that I needed to work on?
Well, or you're simply overanalyzing things and worrying too much.
Oh, that's
when
me.
You're riding around going slow.
That's totally me.
There is full on, if you watch, you know, world level guys anywhere, right?
Right.
You can see them, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But you can be sure that most of that shit they don't even mention to the crew.
Right? Oh, yeah.
That's just, yeah, that's just, I'm going that, fast, that's what happens.
That's what happens.
And it's totally possible and it's common for people to over freak out about things that were just a random anomaly and didn't. Here's my standard. Did it make me run wide? No? Okay, then it didn't happen.
Does it happen every lap? No? Then it's something I'm doing rather than right. Okay. No, it's actually sort of funny. I was watching the Kawasaki's in round one of World Superbike at Thailand. When those guys were pushing the rear wheels off the ground going into corners. When they're not.
It's all smooth when you do that, you know. No bumps at all.
Yeah, right. But when, it was funny because you could actually notice when they were going to run a slow lap. The rear wheel didn't come off the ground at two particular corners. Speaking of which, I went home after our last race, and I thought about the things that you said. That's why I was asking about the seat pad material earlier. And then the other thing I was thinking about was that steering damper. I thought, well, Ed's having a real difficult time adjusting it, and you said it was acting weird. So I thought, yeah, I probably ought to get it, you know, rebuilt, right?
Right.
So I take it in. The guy looks at it, and I said, you know, I think it's time for it to be rebuilt. He flips it over and goes, yeah, it's 16 years old. It's probably time to have it rebuilt. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know any better. I don't know how often you're supposed to rebuild a steering damper.
Well, you know? I think you can just take a wild-ass guess.
It's less than
16 years is too long.
Less than 16 years.
Well, the problem was that your damper, you know, you'd set it here, and it'd feel like X, and then you'd come back in the pits, and it'd feel different than when it left. That's a bad sign.
Oh, yeah. The guy looked at it and said, oh, yeah, this valve over here? I said, yeah. He's like, we changed that design in 2004.
Okay, sorry.
Well, and the other thing is, if your steering damper is turned on enough that it's difficult to make the bars turn in the pits when your bike's not moving, it's too strong.
Yeah.
And you're in the best case scenario, you have a bent frame and you're compensating with the steering damper. Mm-hmm. But more likely, you are scaring yourself and the steering damper is making the problem worse.
Yeah, definitely. All right, next thing on the list, Ed, wings.
Ha 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 ha! Honda's got wings now too.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I just wanted to point that
and
out.
And they're so going to be banned by the end of the year.
You know what's
they
funny?
Showed up on
you
the Moto
a whole
3
bunch
bike.
Of people are like, all, oh, the wings are going to hurt people.
We've had
foot pegs and handlebars on motorcycles since the beginning of time.
Every time I see one of those damn bikes, the wings hurt me. They hurt my eyes.
You deserve. Okay.
I don't know. Has to go. We learn this. Human beings have the ability to learn from the mistakes of others. We can learn from Formula
the
One.
The mistake that you're not learning is that just because it's different doesn't make it bad.
No, but because it's butt ugly makes it bad.
No.
Yes, that's the case. I'm sorry. The golden era of Formula One cars was just before, aesthetics-wise, just before they came out with wings. Since then, it's been downhill. All right, let's see. Ed, why should you never trust an Adam? You wrote down the punchline.
Because they are everywhere.
Because they make up everything.
Because they make up everything. Yeah.
Why
that was worth writing down.
Why can't you use an analogy with a kleptomaniac?
I don't know why.
Because they take everything literally. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Tip
hey,
your
how
waitress.
How are we doing on time?
You know what, Ed? We can go long.
Yeah,
we're just killing time.
Say that every time.
We got plenty of time.
Answer the question.
Oh, we got plenty of time. Let's see.
Definition of the word plenty.
We got at least 10 minutes to go. Let's see. We have World Superbike going on in Thailand.
Okay, so you see this?
Yes. What are
we
doing?
I got the covers off. I got the spark plugs out. I got the engine turned over to the top dead center marks.
Got it.
And then I'm going after the cam sprockets so I don't have to fight to get them out on the bike.
Very
also
clever.
That's the way the instructions tell you to do it.
Also, it's by the way, that's what you're supposed to be doing.
Yes.
I love it. What's this big ass thing here?
That's the hole leading to the spark plug.
Oh, okay, got it. Wow. They're not even at the same level really, it seems like.
Well, it's a 2 spark plug head.
Right.
And it's a V engine, so there's 4 spark plugs.
Right.
And so one engine is turned this way, one head's turned the other way, and it looks different.
Okay.
And the valve cover's not on now, and
okay, got it. World Superbike at Thailand.
That track looks kind of boring.
It is kind of boring. And it usually, you know, last year, this is the second year they've raced there. Last year it made for great racing because there's a corner turn 2, I think it is, and turn 3 actually. They're at the end of really long straights and both of them have multiple lines through them.
That's cool.
Yeah, this year, not so much.
Why?
It's sort of like everybody's got it figured out now.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And that's really, to me, kind of interesting how it happens, where you keep going to the same track, you get a book of how the track works, and then everybody starts reading from the same book. The Honda does look stronger this year. Looks like it's got a little more power, and that may be why Nikki Hayden's bike rattled to a halt on the side of the track. I was looking at the... I was looking at the race and I couldn't hear, but I saw Nikki explaining to his crew what happened. I described it to Ed. Ed interpreted it as electrical.
Electrical or fuel?
Yeah.
He was motioning that the thing just turned off with no warning.
Yeah, it just kind of
he
juddered to a halt.
Like it exploded.
Nope. And there was nothing on the track.
Right.
What else? The
which is a bummer because according to Facebook posts, he was first in free practice 3 this morning.
Yes, he was first in free practice 3.
And his teammate, I think, got third in the race.
Vandermark.
But he was like 9 seconds back from the leader.
He had made a mistake. He ran off the track. And he wasn't that far back.
Ran off the track and still got third.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that...
By the way, Vandermark was on pole.
Oh, yeah, right,
yeah.
He was. Well, that's super pole, though, so it's kind of...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a one-lap thing, right?
I described the 15-minute qualifying session to Sandy last night. I said, okay, so 15-minute mark goes out. All the racers take their brains out of their heads. They put it in the toolbox.
Yeah, we've heard this.
Wait a minute. No, they go out. They put in one quick lap. And then what was funny, because you can read the timing screen, everybody's back in at the 7.5-minute mark. I said, at this point... The crew puts on a new rear tire. The crew chief comes over to the rider with a spoon, scrapes out the remaining gray matter that's still in the guy's skull, and says, now go put one in. And Vandermark flew. Oh my God,
what he's quick. Michael's talking about is that you need to do a lap that is for sure to get you a reasonable grid position.
Right.
If you don't do any laps, if you crash in your out lap, now you're going to be the last guy in whatever the breakdown is.
Last of 12, yeah.
So you go out and you go fast, but not as fast as you can go, so that if you don't go any faster, that's okay.
Right.
Run the second row, third row, whatever. And then you can take the risk of going crazy bonkers.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't, that may or may not work. Some of the guys do the first
round. So remember that if you go to some place where you're doing qualifying. Some clubs are starting to do qualifying for grid position just for the fun of it, because they can, because we have computerized timing systems. So you have to go out of the pits, you have to go all the way around, cross the line wherever the transponder
receiver is. At full speed.
Well,
you know, or it's a flying lap.
And you have to go another complete lap before you have a lap in the books and mm-hmm. get a grid spot. And then you can start going faster.
Right, but you got to put one in. You got to put one in the books.
So what I used to always do is go at it like, you know, whatever your warm-up pace is, mm-hmm. get one in the books, and then go a little faster, and you just keep working your way up.
One of the guys, I forget which crew it was, said that they had gone out the first part of it. It's on the race tire, you know, because they've been practicing with the race tire all weekend long. They know exactly what they can do on it. You put that lap in the books, then you he came in, they put the soft tire on, you know, the one that won't last the distance, but it's not a qualifier, and destroyed the handling of the bike. Way too much rear grip.
Well, and this is a perfect example of why I don't like the Moto America plan to go to qualifying tires for the final qualifying session next year, because mm-hmm. it's pointless. You're practicing something that's got nothing to do with the race. And like I said, if you don't have a great TV package, then nobody gets to see the supposed excitement anyway. So it's silly. Just costs money and takes effort and increases the risk, all for what I see as zero gain. But as Michael says, I could be wrong.
The after the first race in Thailand, reasonably clear that Kawasaki is still an incredibly well-balanced and well-sorted package. Very clear that on tracks with horsepower, because the Aprilia guys are no longer a factory team. But did I tell you the Aprilia, the bikes in World Superbike, the Aprilias, are actually leased by Dorna? And then they turned around and subleased them to a team just so they could have Aprilias on the grid? That bike used to be... it was a missile in a straight line, and tracks like Thailand, it used to do well, but, you know, you basically got a B-level team running it now, so they're nowhere. The BMW did fairly well. The German Superbike champion is racing World Superbike this year. He finished fifth in the first race. And Davide Giuliano crashed again on the Ducati, trying to make up for lack of top-end power, which the thing has. But it was gorgeous. And this is something you as a club racer need to remember. When you crash, make sure you are at a full halt before you attempt to stand up.
Well, you make that sound like only club racers got to
do that. Davide did it. That's what he did this morning or this afternoon, and it was beautiful, dude. He attempted to get up while he was still moving at least 15 miles an hour, and it
sometimes
didn't.
Sometimes that works out and makes you look gorgeous.
You did.
Pop
nope.
This time you face plant. With witnesses.
It was, you know, the crash off the bike, his head never hit the ground. The secondary crash is the one that ruined the helmet. It's beautiful.
What else did we want to say about World Superbike?
Nothing. Go, Nikki.
We'll see what happens. You know, we'll see what happens with that Honda. Let's see.
Oh.
If you've ever worked on a Honda Hawk, then you know why I don't like these cam chain guides.
Why is that?
Because of what you got to hold down wedge A and pull up wedge B and hold it with a 2-millimeter pin.
Got
Everybody
it.
Who's worked on a Hawk is going right now, yeah, that's a fucking pain in the ass.
Next thing on the list, Honda MotoGP bike electronics. It seems to me relatively clear that they worked on the hardware first and then they're going to work on the software. Cal Crutchlow did an interview, and I'm not sure with who, but Cal, God, I love that guy, because he just, you know, he tells you what's going on, right? Said on his bike, the traction control is kicking in halfway down the straight. Okay? That's... big software issues. But that's something you're allowed to work on all year long. So it looks to me like Honda has attempted to do the hard work first, you know, the stuff that you can't fix, and then they'll get to the stuff that they can fix later. Ed, is there any reason for a club racer to have data acquisition stuff on their motorcycle?
Well, it's cool, and so there's guys who are going to get it for that reason.
Okay.
It's just like anything else. It's only a tool. And you're going to spend a lot of time, you know, distracted from something else you should be doing, because you've got data. If you don't have a notebook full of rider notes,
right?
If you're not writing stuff about your lines and what your braking markers and all that stuff every time you get off the track, and then you go by data, you're just fucking fooling yourself.
I was going to say, you know? is the money's better spent elsewhere?
Well, yeah, you can always make the rider seconds faster.
Right.
And you can make the bike tenths faster.
Does data acquisition help the rider?
It can at the club level. Here's the thing is, you know, if you look into the pits and you watch your next MotoGP race,
okay,
count how many guys are sitting at computers.
Right.
If you look at the pictures from the last MotoGP tests, like you have a picture of in the pits, there's the bike.
Right.
It's got some body work off. Somebody's working on it. And you look in the background, count the laptops. Right? There's like two laptops for every person in that place.
Right.
So if those guys need that many smart people to use this stuff effectively, you know, your club racing guy is out of his mind to try to that. If you have numbers on your bike that are made up of tape.
Electrical tape?
You know, you're not ready for data acquisition. There's a lot of other things that are more useful. Unless you have somebody who can do it full time,
right?
Or perhaps you have the discipline to collect the data over the weekend and only look at it between races.
Well,
you know?
And here's the other thing too: you need to know what it means. You need to be able to interpret it. You need to know how to.
I know of guys at the pro level mm-hmm. who are interpreting it to mean what they want it to mean.
Right.
You know, I know of guys who are changing spring rates. Because the suspension is using up more travel than they want to, but it was doing it in one place per lap on a big ass bump. Everybody know, if I told you the track, you'd go, oh, there's a bump in blah, 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 right? And these guys are chasing spring rate for that one thing. Well, you know, you can be stupid enough to make anything not work. All right, stupid is not the word. Blinded enough to make,
lost.
It's just going to reinforce lost. The yeah. preconditions you already have. Ask me this question. Say to me, hey, Ed, do you have data on your bike?
Hey, Ed, do you have data on your bike?
Fuck no.
Yeah, you do. You got your butt in
I
your
got
brain.
Me, yes.
There you go.
I got traction control, too.
Yeah. The article I did with the big EMC Squared company and John McGinnis wired up everything to figure, you know, that was a really interesting illustration of the problem with data and what we call big data now. It's like what they did, the experiment, for those of you who weren't familiar with it, they wired up John McGinnis, they wired him up at a test track, and then they wired him and his bike up at the Isle of Man.
By wired, he means biolithic sensors.
Sensors everywhere on the bike, sensors everywhere on the rider. And then the company published all this data and basically said to the engineering community or anybody who wanted to look, you tell us what this is saying. You tell us what this means. It's interpreting it. That's the value. That's really the value of it.
If you get a simple system, there was a guy renting this stuff.
Higby.
I don't know
Was it Sean Higby?
No.
Oh, okay.
The name of the company started with a K.
Okay.
And so you have like a throttle position sensor and a gear sensor. You have the system that's on the R1.
Got it.
Got the basic stuff. It shows mm-hmm. you what gear you're in.
Oh, yeah.
It shows you when you make the downshift. And then you go like, wow, you know, my bike wiggles when I go into this corner. And then you look at the data and you go, oh, it's wiggling exactly where I back off on the throttle.
Or, yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that, duh. And then you learn to pay attention to that when you're riding. And then you don't need the data anymore.
Right.
That makes sense. That's totally useful. On the other hand, you could just pay attention to you in the first place.
How are we doing on time? That's 29 minutes. You want to wrap this one up?
Yeah, it's hard to to take an engine apart and remember the order and, okay. and talk.
Then I have a
it's a new one for me.
I have a very basic 2-minute board. Okay, I bought a book.
You know, you keep saying that, but if you don't read them, it doesn't count.
I have. Well, you know what, Ed? They look good on the table. You know, and there's plenty of, what do you call those things,
listen,
pretty pictures.
Get back to me when you have a bookshelf.
The bookshelf. So I keep my World Endurance book in my reader, in the library. And there's a picture of a couple of knuckleheads who showed up for the bowl.
Is that the bathroom, the library?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. There's a couple of knuckleheads who showed up for the bowl door. On that's a 24-hour endurance race in France. One of, I think the longest running endurance race. On a super motard. And they finished. It was beautiful. This picture of this guy, full racing leathers, just sitting bolt upright, going about 12 miles an hour. But he finished, and God bless him for doing
that. Yeah, well, ask all the other guys that had to pass
him, right?
Straight away, how cool it was.
You're not
the only person on the racetrack.
It's
when
France.
You're on the racetrack.
Ed, it's France. And what did I tell you before? What did I say earlier today? Never get involved in a business transaction where the finance manager is named Frenchie. He's Ed Sorbo. I'm Michael Gugis. Oh, aloha. By the way, you can find Ed on the web at le-suspension.com, and you can find my genius insights on the web at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. Aloha.